Welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Often, when I have a guest with some wisdom for us Boomer women, I ask what their family and friends can do to support them. Today's guest asked if he could share wisdom about men preparing to leave the 9 to 5 so we women can support them. Whether he's a spouse or a friend, most of us have men in our lives. I really enjoyed this conversation with Michael Kay. As with all my guests, I had a bit of a chat with Michael after we signed off. And as often happens, I wanted to click the record button again. We talked about how society has created this narrative about men being strong, and sometimes it's next to impossible to be strong when you have no idea what the next chapter looks like, only that it'll be different from all the chapters that have gone before. Michael also commented that we women need to confront our own concerns about this next chapter and how those concerns might be influencing how we are dealing with and what we are saying to our husbands or our men friends. Listen now for all the truths Michael shares. I get approached by all sorts of people with all sorts of talking points asking to be guests. If I can relate their talking points to Boomer women, they come on the show. Depending on the topic, I sometimes ask what a woman's partner or family or friends can do to support her on her journey. I had a great chuckle recently when I was approached by today's guest. He talks to mid-age men about the transition from work to whatever's next. And he wants mid-age women to know how to support them, how to have those non-threatening conversations. His request was like having the tables turned when I hadn't thought about their turnability. I like being called on my shit. So let's have this conversation. Michael Kay, welcome to the Boomer Woman's Podcast.
Thank you. I'm really really glad to have this conversation. And when I saw your show, I'm saying this is perfect because really, and I hear this so frequently from men, is either they don't know how to approach the conversation with their wives, they don't feel comfortable in terms of what they're thinking of for their next chapter, or the fact that they don't know what is next for them. So this just immediately resonated for me.
That's great because I found as I was come with notes, and as I was prepping my notes, I realized that I'm talking to a man who deals with men's issues, coming at it from the woman's angle because that's all I know. So this is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to this. And in case I wasn't clear enough, my intro was a thank you for opening a door where I hadn't seen one.
Well, it's really very funny because in my previous career as a financial life planner, and I dealt with lots and lots of couples planning on whatever stages of life. And I always found working with women was so super gratifying because women simply weren't afraid to say, I don't know this. And which made my job so much easier because it's like, great, we are, we know where to start.
Right.
And when as I was working, I was like, gee, I would really like to speak to more women about these issues. And I found, unfortunately, that the door was pretty much closed to me to talk about money to women. And women and they wanted to hear from other women. They didn't want to be mansplained or, talked down to and things like that, which I completely understand. So I turned my attention to working with men in this career transition, in this life stage transition, not career transition, but the transition from work to what happens next. So, but you have to start with that, that conversation and that communication with your spouse or significant other as to what are you thinking about?
I have lots of questions for you. It's okay.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, let's start with you. You've had trans There are several transitions throughout your careers. You've just talked about your financial one. You call that your primary career. Were your transitions by choice over time, or has a transition ever been sort of thrust upon you?
I've had so many transitions, and I'm one of those I've been called a unicorn. I'm one of those that welcomes change. Not that it's easy, but it's like what's around the corner is very exciting. I started my after college. I was an accountant. I was a CPA and worked for accounting firms for 10 years before I went into financial services, and then migrated from there into owning my own, creating my own financial life planning company. But even through the financial world, there were lots and lots of transitions there. So I've been pretty fortunate in that I piloted most of those changes.
Okay, well, you're the unicorn. I call myself a chameleon, so it's the same sort of thing. Before we start, I just want to say to our women listeners, none of my questions are meant to suggest that women don't have similar issues. But today we are talking about the men in our lives to understand what they may not be telling us, what they may not know how to tell us. Michael, why is post-career so difficult for men?
It's such a great question, and it's one that really synthesizes that huge issue of who am I when I'm no longer my job? And so many men identify themselves with, I'm a doctor, I'm a dentist, I'm a lawyer, I'm a business owner, I'm an executive, I'm this, I'm that, I'm, you know, I, and they are their jobs. And once that's taken away, there's this vacuum of identity over trying to figure out, well, who am I really? If I'm no longer doing what I've done for the last 30, 40, 50 years, how do I identify myself in society? You know, I had one client years ago who was an oral surgeon, and by contract, he had to leave his practice and sell it to his partners. And we've been working for transition so long, and we were all set. I mean, it was he had grandchildren, he loved to fish, he had all these different interests. And afterwards, after he retired, he came in. I'm saying, well, how is it going? He goes, to be honest with you, I'm now back working as an oral surgeon, filling in and doing things. I said, you know, help me understand what that, you know, what happened. And he said, he goes, I've been a doctor all my life. I don't want to be a mister. And I listened to him, and I said to him, I said, no, I've been a mister all my life. It doesn't suck that badly, but you know, I understand where you're coming from. So this identity, I am this, and what's attached to it? Social, intellectual. All, you know, how you place yourself in the hierarchy of your life is all wrapped up around your job or your career. And when that's over, there's this just it's just a void for a lot of people.
It's interesting to have you say that because a part of my notes, I tried to show the courtesy of calling it common lore suggests, but you're saying that that really is true. Is it those really high professionals, like the person you just spoke of, that have the greatest trouble transitioning, or who does have the greatest?
From what I have witnessed, a lot of professionals, very successful people, or people that have been very singular in what they do, have difficulties. And I think a lot of it is mindset, is to say, well, what are the instead of saying what am I missing, it's what am I looking forward to, right? So a lot of the people focus on what they're missing rather than, and I just have these conversations with clients all the time. You don't want to retire from something, you want to retire to something. I hate the word retirement anyway, but you want to go into something that is enlivening, that's exciting, that's meaningful, where you can find purpose and you can find satisfaction. But there's so much fear around it, and the expectation is very interesting. And I write three or four blog pieces a week for the Chapter X community that I created for men. And a lot of people talk about, I have trouble filling my time. And this whole mindset that you have to be busy from 8 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night or 9 to 5, you have to fill that time because you've been filling that time for decades. Well, maybe there's another way of thinking about this. Maybe there are other possibilities. Can you play with it? Can you experiment with it? Can you give yourself permission to kind of explore?
In my life and in my business, I suggest that so many facets of that post 9 to 5 life should be considered, discussed well before the big day comes. I know many women don't do that. Do men?
No, and I'll say no, and it's a huge failing in how we think of things, because, and I think a lot of it is because we're so busy. There's so many pressures, whether we're raising children, career advancement, the things that fill our lives, that we don't stop. We don't stop and ponder. We are terrible ponderers, and allowing ideas to marinate and sharing those ideas. I know in my situation, I sold my practice to my partner, and we had been in discussions over this transition for years, working on it. And the one thing my wife is not worried, was never worried about, it was that I would find something to do. But there are many spouses that are concerned, like they just don't know, because they've been so single focused. The classic is, well, what are you going to do when you stop working? Oh, I'm going to play golf. And that kind of sits in the air, like this mist of, really? Like every day, 365 days a year, you're going to play golf? Really? And well, okay, let's start with that. Let's say that's true. Well, what happens if you have a bad hip, or your knee goes out, or your back goes out, or something like that? What's your plan B? How are you going to live your life that has a level of meaning to it? And dead silence. And I had one of the classic stories in my career is, I had a client came in, small business owner, lovely couple, and getting ready to sell his business. And I asked the question, well, what are you going to do with your life? And what are you going to do with your, I'm going to play golf. And his wife looked at him and said, no, you're not. She says, you can play golf twice a week. She says, you're going to get a part-time job 2 days a week. You're going to volunteer 2 days a week. And the seventh day will be a wild card. We'll talk about it. And he said, yes, dear.
Okay, that comes up later in my notes. When I was married back in the olden days, trying to explain the confusion men might have about the women in their lives, I said that my generation of women were busy getting out of the kitchen and creating their futures, while our husbands were the products of provider fathers and often stay-at-home mothers. And they might not be sure what to do with that reality, our current reality. Do many mid-age men still feel that they are, or at least should be, their traditional providers in the family?
I think there are some, but I think that's very few and far between in my experience.
Okay.
I think it really has become more, I'll use the word, enlightened as to understanding the needs of their spouses. But the problem comes into play with men, especially. And you have carte blanche to interrupt me or to disagree with me, is socially, many men are completely at a loss for how to create relationships once they're out of their work environments. And women seem to be way better at creating relationships and maintaining relationships. And I think that's largely due to the competitive nature that many men are, you got to climb to the top. You've got to be the best, and it doesn't matter who you crawl over. So this competitiveness, rather than this idea of interdependency, doesn't, we are the independent men. Rather than, we need to be interdependent, depend on each other, and that way we all grow. And I think women get that a lot more than men have.
Okay. I do also call that common lore that women talk to other women more often than men talk to men, at least about personal matters. Is there any way of making men understand? And I think a lot of it, just I'm going to interrupt myself here, goes
Sure.
back to when my children were small, it was invariably women dropping off at school. So you spend that 10 minutes chatting. Like we just seem to be able to do that there, whereas men were often in the office by 8. Is there any way to get through to men that creating those relationships, having those conversations that are deeper than the job or the golf handicap? I had to think about that word because I'm not a golfer.
Me neither.
that they need to be having those conversations with their counterparts.
Yeah, in the Chapter X community, we talk a lot about this whole idea of, if you're planning on transitioning into your next phase of life, the first step is to have that conversation with your spouse or your significant other, is to talk about what you're thinking about and asking for feedback and being able to share that it is terrifying to most to many men that this idea it's the I think of it as if you remember, if you're an Indiana Jones fan and in Indiana Jones 3 and he had to have the what is it the leap of faith and where he's going to walk out and it looks like an abyss. But it's this leap of faith that when you step off your work career, that there's something underneath you. And for the men who have these conversations and say, hey, I don't know how I'm going to feel because I had never done this before. I don't know necessarily what I'm going to do, but I want you to understand how I'm feeling about this, or what is my thinking around it, and what is my feeling about it. And be able to have that conversation. Because the realization that while many men might believe to their essence, to their marrow, that their wives can read their minds, it isn't true unless you express it and you have the trust to say, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what this is going to look like. And you're going to have conversations that you're going to need to have conversations about things like financial security. What does it look like when the paycheck stops? Are we okay? This is where we are. What modifications might we need to make? Are you going to is if the spouse is working, are you what does your role look like? How does it change? I retired a year and a half before my wife. She wasn't ready to stop. And I said, that's perfectly okay. If that's what you want to have at it. But you have to have those conversations.
You've opened up a whole bunch of avenues that I do want to go down, but I just want to go back for a minute to that word retirement.
Yes.
It comes with so many connotations because of previous generations. Many mid-aged people today are healthy, active. They do not want to put their feet up. I usually define it as the post 9 to 5. You call it Chapter X. Where did Chapter X come from?
Okay. Well, I look at it's the next chapter in your life's book, but X came from actually it came from eighth grade algebra, where you're always having to solve for X, solve for X, solve for X. And I was even though I was a CPA, I was a miserable algebra student. So this solve for X has always rolled around in my brain, and as I tried to think about what I wanted to create. It said, well, you've got to solve for what your next chapter is. So let's solve for X. It's unknown. So that's the derivation of it.
Okay, that's great. I'm really biting my tongue here. I keep on wanting to throw these comments in, and some of them are really gender biased, and I'm thinking,
That's
oh my God,
okay.
is this really me?
That's okay. Throw them out.
Well, no, just about reading a mind, or is how do you read a closed mind? That was the first one.
That's a good one. I like that.
On your website, you say, "What's next when the work you loved is shifting to your rearview mirror?" What if they didn't love the work? Maybe it was a good income and some prestige, but they didn't like it. How does that change the picture?
Well, I think I think if you didn't love what you did, what you've been doing, that to me begs the question of why are you still doing it, number one. But number two, it might just grease the skids a little bit towards moving you a little forward, giving you a little bit more added incentive to move into that transition. It's like, I'll give you an example. I'm thinking of someone I know who's a client who was a high level CIO for a Fortune 50 company. So everything was, technology, blah, blah. He retired and he started building furniture and he did a beautiful, I mean, it was like he would show me pictures. I'm like, can I buy that? I mean, it was just unbelievable the things he was doing. And he has a really full life of different things. So here he went from this very high level stuff to just things that he loved doing. And he had enough passion for it to throw himself into it. So the transition wasn't, and I can't say that he was passionate about being the CIO. It was his job. He was great at it, but he was ready.
The reason I asked that question is just because it seems to be not an uncommon thread amongst older men, especially.
No. It's interesting. I see, different, like for example, attorneys. They are really, a lot of attorneys are really challenged in transition. There's so many are wrapped up in who they are and what they do that they really challenged by that transition. And that's not saying all, but many that I come in contact with over decades have really, I know one attorney who's an estate attorney, very successful, very, very smart. And he's in his 80s and he's still working. And all he and every time I talk to him is like, yeah, I know, I need to make the transition. Yeah, I know.
Well, a couple of the attorneys that I know have said that they don't know what to do with life because they're so used to being working in 7-minute increments, and you just take that clock away from them and it's like, oh, so.
Completely terrified.
Now, you mentioned retiring a year and a half before your wife. I chuckled there because I have two dear couple friends. Both women kept working for another 6 months after their husbands retired so the men could figure it out a bit. And it's worked for them. Do you see that a lot where they don't retire at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I've seen it both ways. I've seen it where the spouse where the wives retire first, and I've seen it where the men retire first. And I don't think it really, as long as the right preparation goes into it, really doesn't matter. If the husband retires and is expecting that, oh, his wife's got to stop working so she can make him lunch. Like that's not going to work, in most cases. Maybe in some odd case, and in some iteration it might, but in most cases, that's not going to work. So it really has to do with, what are the things that you that, and I use I'll use A, B, and C. What are the things that's important to A that A is going to do? What are the things that B wants to do that's important to B? And what are the things that A and B are going to create together under C? So that way of thinking of saying, okay, there's things that you're going to do, things that I'm going to do, and things that we're going to do. But we need to talk about it. We need to know that how it fits into our lifestyle. We need to know how it fits into our financial life. We need to know how we feel about it and where are there any disconnects in those things. If A says, I want to go, climb mountains in Tibet. And, B says, I want to, volunteer at the hospital. Well, if A's off in Tibet, there's no C time. So it really has that, how is this going to work? What are the challenges here? What's your expectation? And what would make this uncomfortable, or what would make this wrong, bad for you? So you have to ask those questions. You know, what do you expect if I'm retiring, if I'm moving on past my career? What do you expect from me? What role do you need me to play in your life, in our life as a couple? How does it fit now?
That might be a really good segue into the reason we're here. You have the ears of a whole bunch of mid-age women right now. If you were to stop talking about the men and talk directly to those women, what would you say? I love doing this to guests. This is great.
No, I'm just debating how to whether to say this the way that it's kind of formed on my tongue already, or to soften it.
No, I just talked about my gender biased
Okay.
thoughts, so you go ahead.
I would say to women that the greatest chances of success in creating this next chapter in life is if you can help co-create a smooth, trusting, and safe environment for the invariable fear that is out there. You know, how do you make it safe for someone to say, I don't have a clue, or I am terrified, or I am at a loss, especially, you know, for men who are used to being, you know, the leaders of their companies, or the leaders in their fields, and they're looked up to, and they're respected, and they're, you know, they're getting all this, you know, all the, you know, the accolades and things like that. And underneath all that professional grandiosity is someone probably really terrified, really scared.
If it makes it any easier for you, part of my notes say many midlife folk have been married for decades. Habits and patterns are ingrained. We women have traditionally been the caretakers, so perhaps we think we know what our men folk should do. That's not always helpful.
No.
And is there a, I won't say an easy way, is there an effective way to open the door to that conversation where the man can say, you know, I don't know who I'm going to be next year when this has all gone away.
Yeah, I think I use the, you know, the old saying, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time, right? I think it's an incremental conversation that needs to be A, in a safe place, one that's private. Like, this is not necessarily a great conversation to have in a crowded restaurant, you know, over cocktails. It's probably one that's like taken in small bites. Can we talk about, let's talk about what your thoughts are about this next chapter, or what are the things that you're looking forward to, or how do you feel about X, you know, and you know when it, and then have a very finite ending, making the conversation small, making them productive in the way that you feel heard and the spouse feels heard. It's a lot, it's about space. Okay, it's about allowing that other person to, you know, to exhale, to be able to break down some of those barriers.
Am I also correct in suggesting that some of the conversations have to be strictly about the man? I'm saying the man in this case because we're talking about his retirement. So
Right.
some of those have to be strictly about him. It can't be about what the wife wants or needs or thinks or anything like that. It's just leaving that door open to go where he needs to go.
Sure. And I think it's, you know, so many times I've had these conversations with couples is about, you know, using that framework about A, B, and C. You know, it looks like it almost looks like the Olympic rings. You know, there's your stuff, my stuff, and our stuff, into those interlocking rings. And it's like, let's make our first conversation. Let's gather our questions. What questions do you have for me? And here are some of the questions I have for you. And we don't have to answer them that, but let's gather them. Let's put these questions as we have them now, so we can start addressing them in a way that is productive. Now, why don't you choose which one of those questions would you like to talk about first when we sit down to talk about this next week? So I think it really needs to be approached in a way that is productive but logical. Like we have a pathway. So what are the issues? Are the issues financial? Are the issues health related? Are the issues, social? Or what are you going to, what are your activities or things that are going to fill your life? How does it impact us as a couple? So each one of those is a different conversation. And I always recommend, especially if I'm coaching men or coaching couples, is this whole idea of let's keep a journal of our conversations. So we're kind of building the story of of how we're coming to this place. And we can add another chapter, we can amend it, we can rewrite it, but let's start memorializing our thoughts, because after a while, it can become very murky if we're going to rely on our memories.
Obviously, our memories are kind. So what about it's not unusual to see people in the workforce, age 70, into their 70s. If the wife, the woman of the couple, was really looking forward to creating this next chapter together again, which they maybe haven't been solely together since pre-kids. So this is a great opportunity. But he says, "Oh no, I'm going to keep on working. I like my job. Whatever the reasons are. But he wants to keep working because that's what he knows." Where does that come into the conversation?
It's a hard conversation, because it's like, what's important, what's important to you beyond the work? Is it our time together? Is it travel? Is it doing things with our children or grandchildren? What are the things that are important? And, how can you see ways of modifying what you're doing so that you're aiming in that direction? Because how can we, if we, let's say we have a grand dream, we want to do a 60-day cruise around the world or something. It's like, well, we can't do that if you're working. If you're still working, this is a dream that we've always talked about. How do we move in that direction? I was talking to someone, he was a client, and been working together for years and years, and he is an optometrist. And I said, so, are you going to at some point close your practice? He goes, oh, I don't know. He goes, I go in, I see my clients, it's fine, I like it. He goes, there's nothing I really want to do. And his wife kind of rolled her eyes. And I said, I think the two of you need to talk.
I'm going to go to the opposite extreme now.
Okay.
We've been talking about planning for retirement. In this crazy economy, many people are downsized without any warning or consultation. Can you address that from a man's point of view?
Yeah, you talk about being terrified. Finding yourself in your 50s or early 60s out of a job is terrifying. And one of my biggest complaints about the financial planning industry is, there's this great focus on investments, but there's very little focus on asking questions like, well, are you an industry that is likely to, that looking like it's going to downsize or change or be, consolidated? What skills do you have? What happens if it's, that plan B? What happens if you lose your job? Do you have enough resources to be able to survive a job hunt? What kind of jobs are you liable to have? So these are conversations that people don't even think about, because Most people put their head down, they do their thing every day, and they wind up walking into, the wall of fire because they're just unprepared.
You've used that term plan B several times in our conversation, and I maintain that I'm pretty much on plan, I don't know, G or H by now. You
Yeah,
know, that's the
well,
way life is.
I terrify people when I talk about plan B, because when we get to that, then I say, well, what about plan C? So, because the fact of the matter is that stuff happens that you don't expect. And, a health issue, right? Now what? Are you just going to sit and be in your health issue? Or are there other things that you can think about that might be interesting for you to explore?
I often say the good news is there's 26 letters in the alphabet.
It really is important to be thinking expansively. And what are the other possibilities? I am absolutely positive that I cannot live long enough to explore all the things on my list.
Going to live forever, and so far, so good.
Well, send me over whatever you have. Send me over some of it, okay?
I said so far, so good. Okay, to go back to your story, you started out, I'm just going on your notes now.
Okay.
You started out a musician, and after several careers, you came back to it. And I think that's great. Do you encourage men to revisit like past joys, albeit they not necessarily lucrative ones?
Well, it's interesting. I was a classically trained trumpet player growing up, and it was the focus of my life. Both of my parents were professional musicians, as was my uncle. And not that they wanted me to be a musician, because they didn't at all. And through a story which I won't bore you with, but it's actually a great story, I walked away from music. I just put my horn in my case and didn't open it for 50 years. And something turned the switch for me, and I decided to go back and try playing again. And taking lessons, and now I'm playing with an adult big band, and I'm having the time of my life because I'm still working through the perfectionism problem of, what I was then versus what my capabilities are today, and just trying to focus on the fun of it. And so again, it's a mindset.
Great. Yeah, I love those stories. Okay, so you coach the men we've been talking about. What does that look like?
Coaching really can it can be as simple as one or two conversations about something very finite, or it can be 3 or 4 to 6 months of kind of preparation into. And it's a really interesting exploration, because it really is about listening and asking questions and not being judgmental about what you're hearing. And I think the biggest problem that most humans have is this feeling of feeling judged by others is a real problem. And so if you can take that out of the equation and say, I'm here to walk this with you, and support you, and whatever you decide, what's good for you, is fantastic. But I'm not going to tell you anything that you're wrong. If this is what you think, try it. How does it work out? Explore it. What's your mindset on? So coaching, which I trained to become a certified life coach as I was preparing my transition after my career. And it really is joyful. It really is one of those things that is extraordinarily fulfilling, because you're able to, to be quite honest, after decades of dealing in financial matters, whether as an accountant or as a financial life planner, I don't want, I've written countless articles. I've written 2 books around financial planning, and I don't want to talk about money. So this gives me a chance to really engage without having without having my financial hat on to talk about those things.
Okay, so you coach men, but you mentioned the couple that you had in front of you where he said, I'm going to golf 7 days a week. And she said, no, dear, you're going to golf 2 days a week. You're going to volunteer 2 days a week. I can't remember what the other two were. And then they had a seventh day, whatever it's
Wow.
called, wild card. That made me squirm as a woman that she had his week planned out for him. Where does counseling, potentially counseling a woman, come into that picture?
Yeah, I mean, that was what was interesting about that, and this story was is probably about 10 or 15 years old of this occurrence. But really what it became was the beginning of a framework of conversation. So what she did in saying that to him was, you need to think in terms of structure of you have these 7 days. And if you think it's just golf, your thinking is limited. So let's think about these other things. So the conversation that came off from there was not like, hey, this is what it's going to be. Like it or not, this is what it is. It was really more to kind of ch break the this kind of amorphous thinking, oh, I'm just going to play golf. It's like, well, maybe you have to consider that there are other options. And that's really the direction that the conversation went to after that statement.
Okay, I have one more question later on that we'll come back to this.
Okay.
Okay, you have several different coaching options.
Uh-huh.
How does a man decide what? How does a woman decide which coaching spirit the thing to put her husband into? Sorry,
Really,
I had to throw that in there.
you know what? Any coaching relationship always starts with a conversation. What's appropriate? And sometimes it just means let's just start talking and let's just take it one session at a time and see if it's moving in the right direction. If it is, and they're saying, okay, let's try this program or let's try that. So it's not one of these things that is, oh, it's got to be A or B. It's like, figure out what's right for you. Some people know immediately they want A. Some say they want B. Others say, I really don't know, but can we explore it? It's like, sure, if this is for you. So. That's kind of my attitude about it. I know there are a lot of coaches who are saying, this is the deal. It's 6 months, it's X dollars, and it's this, it's that. And I don't believe that that cookie cutter approach or that very finite, maybe someone who is trying to build a business and they need that structure for to build their business, that's fine. It's not my goal. I'm not trying to build a business. I want to help people. But there needs to be a financial piece of it for accountability purposes.
It seems rather counterintuitive to say to a person, I want to help you be the person you want to be become, and here's how you're going to do it. So.
I could never buy into that. And when I was working, I worked with several wonderful, amazing business coaches along the way, and I was very blessed by it. And what I found in each, well, one of them was a very set program, and that was fine. Another one, others were more like, we're going to just work. And I knew when it was over. I knew when we came to a place where I was no longer either engaged or I wasn't getting out of it what I wanted to. So there has to be that trust and that relationship built up that one can say to the other, I think we're done. I've reaped all the benefits I think I can at this point. I might not feel that way 6 months from now, but right now that's where I am.
I liken it to almost like, as you, the coach, working yourself out of a job. So you get your client to such a place that he doesn't need you anymore.
Exactly. The job is to support that person and to be creating what their values are and put and move into the way where they can start to put those things into effect, and then bye-bye. Go do it. You know how you're doing.
Okay, if someone wants to check out your stuff and or what is it, Chapter X? Where do
Chapter.
we find you on the World Wide Web?
Well, it's www.michaelfkky.com.
Okay, you're on social?
A little bit, very little. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm a little bit on Twitter. I'm not a fan of social media, really. It's become such a ugh.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Ugh. Yeah.
But you do have a podcast.
I do a weekly podcast for Chapter X. It's on Apple and Spotify and all those things, and I bring in guests of all kinds to talk about different things. And I've had therapists, I've had authors, I've had coaches, I've had doctors and trainers and things like that. But to me, the best stories are the stories of men who have gone through transitions and share their stories. And I've had some wonderful stories. I had one gentleman who was a nuclear submarine commander, and another who was a Vietnam War helicopter pilot. And I had one. There was one gentleman. My wife and I met. It was at a street fair in a local town, and he had this beautiful pottery. And we went over to his little kiosk there, and we're looking at it, and I said, "How long have you been a potter?" And we started talking, and he was a retired teacher. And I brought him on the podcast to share his story. And it was fascinating. So I've had some wonderful, amazing guests. I don't know if you're familiar with the name Parker Palmer, who, if you, he's written, I don't know, a dozen books or more. He's just, an incredibly deep, rich thought leader and author, and it was maybe one of the most heartfelt, amazing conversations I've ever had. And the fact that he came on my podcast was amazing, because he's like this top-level, amazing human being, and I'm like, and "You're coming on my podcast? Like, that's amazing."
Well, I said that when you agreed to come on my podcast.
Oh, please. Yeah, so it's been a wonderful experience, and I really enjoy it. As I said, the ones that are to me that are the best are, and I have one of the men who were part of the chapter, who's part of the Chapter S community. His wife came on to talk about her experience through his transition.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how stories. They hit home, you know, that you can maybe connect with all of it or even just a little bit of it, and it gets you into the next place.
Yeah, that to me is the goal, is this, to walk away and say, "I heard something in there that sparked me, or something in here in that conversation that really touched me, or that I related to." And yeah, I've had some amazing, amazing people come on the show and talk about their stories, and how some of them transitioned into like full-time philanthropic work. And that is what they're It's their passion. And so it's just been really joyful.
I know after this is my season five, and I love being able to. And even as you were talking, I went, "Oh, that reminds me of that other person I talked to, or talked to, and that other person." And that's where I'm going to go next. I said about golf. I did interview a gentleman last year who talked to people about next chapter stuff. Golf or pickleball?
Okay. Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you because golf is that. Old idea of retirement. He said, pickleball is the new golf.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that are playing pickleball, and yeah,
That was just a tease. I'm just.
I'm one of those very odd ducks. I'm not much for competitive sports, because I'm a little too competitive. So I just stay away. And I'd rather just compete with my own abilities in, as I lift weights or whatever I do, or yoga or things like that. But golf, I played at golf for many years, or for, not even many years, for several years, as I was encouraged, "Oh, you got to play golf for business and things like that." And I just thought this was the worst waste of time. I could never not think about all the work sitting on my desk or other things I'd rather be doing. So.
Well, I opened this whole conversation with a bit of a blaspheme, and I'll tell you what a whole bunch of people I know call golf. It's called whack shit.
Watched. Yeah, I just don't, I know, I and I have very dear friends who they love it. It's part of their passion, and it's like, bless you. That's what gets you up in the morning. I have nothing to say. I have no judgments about it. It's not my, it's not my, it's not my thing.
Okay, before we close, may I ask you a personal question?
Of course.
You have some fabulous artwork behind you.
Ah, yes, that's my from my 7-year-old granddaughter. This is actually, I think it's probably a year or so old already. I'm about due for a refresh, but I am blessed with three granddaughters, two of which are 10 minutes from here. One, unfortunately, is in Chicago, and she's actually turning 2 next week. So I am extraordinarily blessed with three incredible young girls who love their papa.
You never realize how much you miss the art on the fridge until it comes back. Yeah, my fridge is full of artwork.
I have a little sticky note on my computer screen where my older love, her love, I love you, papa. And that's, those are the things that keeps your feet on the ground. And your head out of your butt, I think, so.
That's great. That's almost a perfect way to end. Thank you.
It's been
Your
my pleasure.
website link is in the show notes. All the links are on your page at our website. Listeners, if you have thoughts on today's show, talk to us. Leave comments where you're listening, or if you're listening at the Boomer Woman's podcast at boomwithabang.com, scroll to the bottom of the page and talk to us there. Leave stars and reviews where you can. It helps us climb the visibility ladder. Share this episode in two places. With the man in your life, if you think he's struggling in any way with this transition, and with your women friends. Whether we have husbands or not, it's all food for thought. Michael Kay, thank you for being my guest today. It was a really good reminder that men often go through the same transitions as us, but often, maybe even usually, in a different way.
Absolutely. It's been my honor. Thank you.
Have a great rest of week.
You as well.